Next on NPR's From the Top. It's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. And today, from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, our lineup of outstanding musicians includes a 17-year-old clarinetist from California playing the music of John Williams, and, as you just heard, a 13-year-old cellist from here in Boston playing Paganini's fiendishly difficult Variations on One String. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for joining us, everybody. As always, it's great to be back in our broadcast home, Jordan Hall. You know, a young musician's best friend is his or her instrument. That's sort of a theme we have going today, the quirky and sometimes stormy relationships between the teenage musician and the thing they play. The young bassoonist up first loves her instruments, but thinks it's always scheming against her. There is the violinist who left her first instrument in pieces. And of course, I can totally relate to the 13-year-old pianist on the show. She's always playing unfamiliar instruments, sometimes in really weird places. But first, let's enjoy the collaboration of a girl and her bassoon. Appropriately enough for our little theme, she has actually named that bassoon Jafar. Please welcome, from Atlanta, Georgia, 16-year-old Sarah Abraham. Sarah, welcome. So why do you name your bassoon Jafar?
Well, it all goes back to Disney, always. So it's from Aladdin because it kind of was a villain to me. I mean, it also resembles Jafar in terms of its color scheme. It's brown, it's a really dark stained wood, and it's skinny and it's kind of tall. And it really has a malicious intent of its own.
Really? So you've had to really tame it, or it's a constant adversarial situation.
I've tried to beat it into submission, but that didn't work. So in the end, it's, you know, collaboration, reed-making, working together, you know, those Disney morals hit home.
That's right. Always works. I don't know. I'm listening to you play and playing with you the last few days, it seems like you've reformed the villain. Do you think it's possible?
I try.
What are you and Jafar and I going to play?
We are going to be playing the first movement of the Sonatine for Bassoon and Piano by Alexander Tonsman.
Okay, when you're ready, we will take it from the top. Thank you. Sarah Abraham, 16-year-old bassoonist from Atlanta, Georgia, leading us off with Tonsman. I just appreciate you bringing that piece to open with because it sounds so much like an overture. It's just so bright and cheerful. Well, it has a certain impishness, a certain Jafar aspect. And the bassoon...
It's angry Disney Channel, so you know it's angry but still happy.
That's right. You've got quite the sense of humor. I mean, the bassoon suits you. I mean, it's really... No, well, the bassoon is widely known as the clown of the orchestra. Is that a name?
It is very, very true. My section back home in my youth symphony orchestra, we're known for messing around. Whether it's, you know, decorating our bassoons for a Christmas concert with ribbons and Santa hats, or whether it's taking things up an octave, so we like to make fun of the flute players. I mean... We just really enjoy, I mean, it's about having fun. That's mm-hmm. what music should be about. And we really take that to heart, maybe take it too far, but
that's all right. I think go there. I think over the top is good on From the Top. And what about the psychology of bassoonists as opposed to, say, flutists? I think you feel they're high-strung or neurotic.
We're a friendlier crowd, I like to think. Flute players are really nice. Some of my really good friends are flute players, but they have a neurosis about them. It's, for example, at auditions, I remember it was Atlanta Symphony Youth Orchestra auditions, the bassoonists, we kind of put our chairs in a circle and we would complain about like, oh, this excerpt's hard, but we wouldn't actually, you know, try to show off. We would just talk about our summers, and the flute players would find a little corner and play Peter and the Wolf until you thought they were just going to have a nervous breakdown.
Right. And God forbid any of them should practice the piccolo, because that's an instrument you should not.
One of my best friends is a piccolo player. We shared a room at Allstate, and she thought that playing piccolo in the bathroom would be quieter. Piccolo bouncing off tiles is one of the most miserable things I've ever experienced.
Those high frequencies must do something to their brain, I think.
I think so.
But I mean, you've had problems with people not being able to recognize the bassoon. Not recognize it in terms of respecting the bassoon, but recognizing it just visually. I mean, going through airport security and things like that?
Yes, because I can't check it because it's my baby and I refuse to.
Sure.
I always have to take it through security, and the security guards always have a comment about it. They're never silent. And usually they say, oh, you play the oboe, and I'm thinking, yeah, I play a really short black instrument because it's brown. But the worst was when I was in Boston in December visiting my friend Emily, and what they said was, oh, you play the flute. And I didn't even know what to say to them. I was like, yeah, silver instrument, single tube, kind of, you know, but brown, 4 feet. Like, I didn't even know what to think.
Doesn't make me too confident going through Logan Airport myself. But that's okay. And your relationship with your bassoon was sort of clandestine, shall we say. You actually started the bassoon behind your mom's back.
Yes, because, you know, every kid loves to rebel. So I was originally a percussionist and then a saxophone player. And as a saxophone player, that was in band class in fifth grade. And I'd gotten slightly ahead just in terms of what I was playing. And so they wanted to switch me to the bassoon. And I didn't know what it was. Because, I mean, how many 10-year-olds do you know that
were they just filling in a blank in the band or something?
Yeah, we didn't have one. It's a K-12 school. We didn't have a single bassoonist. And so my mom did research, and she found out that, you know, most people think you shouldn't start till you're more mature, so like 14, maybe after having played clarinet or saxophone for a while. And so she thought I shouldn't do it. She thought I wouldn't like it. And so I went behind her back. And that worked out nicely for me.
And you're happy to have had the extra time to get used to it.
Definitely.
Anyway, Sarah, you've got a mind ripe for rebellion, obviously, but I hear you have a mind for math as well.
Yes, I actually really enjoy math, as sick and twisted as that might sound to some of you. I'm currently enrolled in a BC calculus class at my school with some of the smartest kids I know, and we joke about being the mathletes. We do warm-up problems, warm-ups for mathletes. So we just really enjoy being nerds, it's fun. I'm a geek and I'm proud to be one.
Yeah. You have not only been solving math problems, but you have a way of solving the Rubik's Cube. You actually came up, well, you've learned how to solve
right.
a Rubik's Cube. You have a method, actually.
Yes.
How do you talk about that? How do you mention it?
I could either talk about it or I could explain it to you. Which would you prefer?
Well, Seeing as, well, you know, first of all, let everybody know how long it would take you to figure out a Rubik's Cube. I mean, if we were properly messed up, how long would it take?
About 1.5 to 2 minutes.
Okay.
But I'm not that fast.
So given that it would take me 1.5 to 2 days, perhaps explaining won't do me any good, but talking about it, I think, might be fun.
Well, one of the keys to the Rubik's Cube is that the centers don't move. And so when you look at a Rubik's Cube, you think every piece shifts. But the way it's built, and I've actually seen broken Rubik's Cubes and, like, put them back together and stuff. So the centers are always relative to each other the same. So it's a matter of arranging the pieces around that. And so what you do is you solve it in layers. So if you're looking at a, you know, front that's a 3x3, you start with the first layer and you put all those pieces in the right place. Then in the second layer, the centers are already in the right place. Mm-hmm. So you put those four edge pieces in the correct rotation in place, and then you work on the last side. And then you can kind of use those methods and stretch them into a 4x4, but that's different because there's no fixed center. Because if you think about a 4x4 in your mind, the 16 squares on the face, there is no exact center. And then taking an amalgamation of the 4x4 and the 3x3, you can do a 5x5 with a few added squares that are a little different.
Oh, I get it. Rubik's Cube sales are just going to plummet now that everybody's going to have Sarah's method. It reminds me of a beautiful mind. You remind me of a beautiful sound. It was a great pleasure starting the program with you, Sarah. Thank you for being with us. Sarah Abraham, 16-year-old bassoonist from Atlanta.
So many kids in our show have amazing skills outside of music. Learn more about any of your favorite performers at our website, fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our next performer made the trip to Boston from Basking Ridge, New Jersey. Please welcome 16-year-old violinist Hannah G. Hannah, welcome. I know New Jersey fairly well, but I don't know where Basking Ridge is, and I'm wondering whether you indeed do a lot of basking there. Where Basking...
Bask, but it is a really nice town. It's really quiet and cozy.
Nice. Is it on the coast? Is it inland? Is it middle?
It's like dead center.
Dead center, okay.
Central. Wow.
And who is the lovely instrument we have here?
This is made by Francis Kuttner, 1993. It's named Michael.
Its name is Michael. Now, I think there have been a couple of Michaels in your life. Which one is this?
This is Michael Jr. Michael Sr. is in my room.
I guess, by the way, it isn't too crass to mention that you paid for Michael Jr. with the big bucks you got as one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We're going to hear about the Michaels in your life, the various names in your life, after you play. What is it going to be?
We're going to play two Gershwin preludes by Yasha Heifetz. George Gershwin, arranged by Yasha Heifetz.
Very good.
Thank you.
Hannah G., 16-year-old violinist from Basking Ridge, New Jersey, performing for us George Gershwin's Preludes Numbers 2 and 3, arranged for violin and piano by Yasha Heifetz. Heifetz ain't got nothing on you, girl. She's, he gave you some things to do there, but, you know, it just sounds to me like, you heard the Gershwin Preludes and wanted to play them on the violin. It just sounds totally, you know, part of you. Do you like those pieces a lot?
I love this.
They're show pieces, and you obviously like to show.
Oh, yeah.
It's good. It was really good. I like your stories about your various violins because they demonstrate how a young violinist develops. You started on Suzuki violin when you were how old?
5 years old.
Okay. And so what was your very first violin like?
It was a cookie box model with a ruler as my fingerboard.
So, no, it was a real cookie box, not
just
like...
It's a cookie box with the wrappers in it.
Wow, with the wrappers in. Does that affect the sound nicely, or is that a...
I love the way it sounds.
Yeah? Okay, so from the cookie box, you graduated to, I understand, a 1/16th size violin.
Yes.
And you actually still have that violin somewhere, yes?
Yes, in pieces.
Oh, that's the one that you destroyed.
Yeah, I destroyed it.
What happened?
Literally. Well, it was in a Suzuki class, so my teacher ordered it as for the whole class. And of course, I was really excited. And so I ran into the first in line, mm-hmm. and I got the violin. I was so proud of myself. I was showing it to my mom, and I ran to her, and two steps, I tripped over and ran my knee into it.
Ooh, and just smashed it to smithereens.
Yeah. And
so,
my mom was so angry.
I think your mom took it also as sort of an omen, yes?
My mom thought that I shouldn't play violin after this.
Yeah.
Because I broke a lot of violins right after that, too.
Oh, really?
My friend dropped it. There was a crack in my violin.
Well, and you're waving this around with some impunity, too. I'm wondering, you know, whether that's going to turn into something. And soon after, Michael comes into your life. Why Michael? Why the name Michael for your violin?
I named it Michael because it's a name of saint, like Saint Michael, the archangel. And I really liked it because the church I go to, we always say the prayer for Saint Michael, like right before the mass starts. Mm-hmm. So I really liked it. So I decided to name it Michael.
That's right. And your grandmother, I guess you've got two sisters?
Yeah. She used to call me Michaela. I was going to name it Michaela, but I didn't like the fact that it was a girl because I like how the G strings sound like really manly.
Okay.
So I changed to Michael.
So it's Michael. Now, Michael Sr. actually had a problem with one of the strings, yes?
Yes, it rattled the E string.
Yeah.
So, and I couldn't fix it.
Couldn't get rid of it.
Brought it to everywhere, but I couldn't fix it,
yeah.
So.
So, you know, so this one's pretty good. So it's a fairly
pretty.
Modern violin, and I guess it's a good thing from the top sort of came
it's
to the rescue.
It's younger than me, 2 years.
Oh, he's younger
yeah.
than you? Aww.
It's really cute.
Little Michael. Now, your violins aren't the only things you yourself, you know, named. You mm-hmm. actually changed your name. Why?
Yes, I did. Well, my Korean name's Haesung. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for other people to pronounce it. So they always go like, hey, and then there's a long pause. And they go like, Sung-ji. And then Sung-ji is in Korean, like it's translated to as mouse.
Oh.
So practically they're calling me a mouse. Like, hey, mice. Like, hey, mouse. And then it really frustrates me. So
it's annoying, yeah.
So I decided to change my name.
So how did you come upon Hannah as your chosen name?
The name Hannah means graceful.
Okay.
And I really liked it because back when I was 12, I was really athletic, but I was really clumsy.
Mm.
So by having that name, I might, you know, probably my personality might change more.
Or you might become less obsessed with athletics. I mean,
sure.
Hannah's more a needlepoint type name, you know, poetry, you know.
Yes.
But you chose Hannah for yet another reason. You had trouble finding something to go with your last name, to go with G. Let's demonstrate the problem.
The name game. Shirley. Shirley, Shirley, Boberly, Banana, Banana, Boberly, Peepa, Momerly.
Yes, it's the name game. Hannah, Joanne, and I are going to tell you some typical American names, and you're going to tell us why they didn't cut it, okay?
Okay.
How about Mary?
Mary G. Sounds like marriage.
How about Claire?
Claire G. I'm not clergy. I'm, it sounds like, you know, Roving stuff.
Ella?
Allergy? No, too depressing.
Allie.
Allie. Allergy? Sounds like allergy. Achoo! Woof.
K?
KG? I'm an honest person.
Well, I've got the best idea yet. Get this. Gigi.
GGG? That's crazy.
I don't know. I think it's kind of cute. Name
game. Actually, Hannah, I think Allie G works for me. Total
oh,
respect. That would be nice. But as long as it's not Kenny, I'm all right. It's really fine. Anyway, Hannah, that Gershwin-Heifetz arrangement was just on fire, and we thank you for that and wish you the best of luck with Michael and everything else.
Thank you.
Hannah G., 16-year-old violinist from Basking Ridge, New Jersey. Joining me on stage, a 13-year-old pianist with a huge, infectious smile. You can't see it on radio, but believe me, it's lighting up the stage here at Jordan Hall. From Gates Mills, Ohio, just outside Cleveland, please welcome Ariana Curtin. Ariana, I'm smiling because I'm so looking forward to this beautiful piece. What are you going to play?
I'm going to play Jadot by Maurice Ravel.
The stage is yours. Thank you. 13-year-old pianist Ariana Curtin playing Jodot by Maurice Ravel. I'm so jealous of you. It occurs to me I was exactly your age when my piano teacher assigned me this piece, and I remember, you know, taking it of an evening and looking at the music, and I never got past the first page. It was like one of those moments, and I would always play pieces that were harder than I could do.
Yeah.
But this one, I just said, no, I can't do it.
But it's very nice.
But how do you learn it? I mean, you know, I was just so daunted looking at the page. Was there a performance that you heard that thought made you think, I really am dying to play this piece, or what was it?
Well, when I had the music assigned for me, I had the music, the score in front of me, and then I also had, I listened to the CD while I followed the music. And actually, while I was listening to it, I was wondering, how am I going to memorize all those notes? It's just too many.
It's a lot. Well, so is it physical memory? Can you close your eyes and just remember where your hands are on the keyboard? Or?
Yeah.
There are all kinds of memory, I guess.
I don't know. I just memorize it because the music's just in me.
Familiarity breeds content. I think so. Jodot, tell everybody what Jodot means.
Jodot means fountains, the playing of water.
Yeah. Water play or water games is the literal translation, but it means fountains. And so, I mean, we mentioned at the top of the show that you've practiced this piece, or practiced a lot of things in unlikely locations. What sorts of places have you been playing the piano recently?
Well, whenever I go out to travel, because I need to practice every day, and if I just miss one day, it'll totally blow me off. The next day I come to the piano, I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always have to play piano every day, at least get my fingers warmed up. Mm-hmm. So one time I was in Florida, and we had to find a place to play piano, and we always find places to play piano, and it's kind of hard to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we went to Costco, and we saw one of those electric pianos, and it didn't even work, so I had to just play the piano without any sound.
Just the keys going up and down, but
yeah,
at
and
least it was
I had no clue if I was playing the correct notes or anything. At least I was exercising my fingers.
You were keeping your physical relationship with the instrument on a day-to-day basis, and I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. A day without the piano is just death to me. Now, you have another talent besides playing the piano so beautifully. What's that?
I have perfect pitch. Sometimes my parents and I play this game. They just ask, "Ooh, what's the sound of this, the dryer at the house, or a siren that passes by, or what's the note?" And I say, "Oh, that's an E, or that's an A, or that's an F sharp," and
well,
I just get it.
Would you mind if we threw a household sound at you to test your perfect pitch abilities?
Okay.
Okay. This is the family lawnmower.
That's an A.
It is indeed an A. Very good. I'm a believer in your perfect pitch abilities and your piano playing abilities. I just loved hearing that, Jodot.
And, Thank you very much.
So appreciate you being with us, Ariana. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Ariana Curtin, 13-year-old pianist from Gates Mills, Ohio.
Welcome back to the radio showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're coming to you from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Up next, music for the clarinet by the great film composer John Williams. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. From Los Gatos, California, here's Joseph Morris. Joseph, welcome. I truly appreciate your ingenious choice of music. Would you please introduce the piece and tell us where you found it?
Sure. In 2007, I was in Salt Lake City for a music competition, and I was watching HBO in my hotel room, and it was playing Steven Spielberg's movie, The Terminal. And it was a really great movie, and throughout it, I was noticing these really great clarinet parts. The movie is about a man who comes from a fictitious country in Eastern Europe, and he's come to the United States for an unknown reason. But right as he arrives, his country and the United States become they're at war, and so he's unable to go into the United States, but he's also unable to go back. So he's stranded in the terminal. You can watch the rest of the movie. I won't give away the ending, but it's really great. And the main character, Victor Navorsky, for whom the piece is named, is a really bright and charming character. And the piece by John Williams that I'm going to play really reflects that. And so at the end of the movie, during the credits, the entire thing plays. And I really thought that this was a really great piece of music. So I went home, and a couple Google searches later, I had discovered the history and a place where I could order the music arranged for clarinet and piano by the composer John Williams. And so the history of the piece is a little bittersweet. It was performed by Emily Bernstein, a very renowned studio musician. And when she performed it, Steven Spielberg and John Williams were so enthralled with her performance, they decided to add her name in the credits, which doesn't usually happen to studio musicians. But it was a huge honor for her. At the same time, it was also one of her last performances as she passed away shortly after her performance.
Very sad. But wonderful that you just became so turned on by this piece and you brought it for us. So let's play it.
Thank you.
Our 17-year-old clarinetist, Joseph Morris, from Los Gatos, California, playing Victor's Tale. It's taken from the film score for The Terminal by John Williams. Thank you for bringing that to us.
Sure.
It's just great. You're bringing your knowledge and your love of music to already some younger clarinetists. You do a little bit of teaching?
Yeah. When I was an eighth grader in middle school, my band director there suggested that I help out a few of the incoming sixth graders learn how to play some clarinet. And so I started there, and there was some good word of mouth. Some people, you know, talked to other people. And by the time I was an underclassman in high school, I had 5 or 6 students each year.
Good for you. And do you enjoy it?
I really love it. I mean, one of the things that I really say to a lot of people who ask me like about teaching is that I learn a lot from teaching the musicians. For example, I had a sixth grader who came to me, and his biggest problem was that he squeaked whenever he got to a certain note on the clarinet, a higher note. And so I gave him some tips, but I couldn't solve the problem in the lesson. So what I did was that afternoon, I went through and changed my embouchure and the way I played a little bit to find out exactly what change caused the squeak on that specific note. Mm-hmm. And so I went back and told him, and it worked. So he learned how to not squeak. And then at the same time, my knowledge grew about, you know, the clarinet and what type of embouchure to use not to make that error.
Nice. So you became an empath, trying to take on the mistakes of your students.
Yeah.
And then from the inside out, sort of like Spock and the Vulcan mind meld sort of thing. Must have been a painful experience making that squeak, I can imagine. But thanks for being brave about that. Well, Joseph, we want you to put your own teaching cap back on. To explain why, here's our 17-year-old roving reporter, Tasha Coleman-Jones.
Thank you, Chris. Joseph, I was reading the From the Top report on you, and I guess I thought one thing about you was kind of cool. You teach your normal non-music playing friends to actually like some classical music. Explain what you do.
Well, my friends don't exactly understand why I like classical music so much. And I'm into some 80s hard rock, too, like AC/DC and Van Halen. What I'll do, though, is I'll play a classical music excerpt for them that I think is just as hardcore as the 80s rock we like to listen to, like a passage from Mahler or Beethoven.
Well, see, consider me one of your friends, because I don't know much about classical music, and I don't think I even like much classical music.
Hey.
I mean, I can't help it. I mean, I'm way into Metallica and Megadeth. But I want you to do, you know, for me, what you do for your other friends, and play me something that'll pump me up as much as hard rock. Show me.
All right. This is something from the end of Mahler's Fifth Symphony.
Okay, all right. At least that was loud.
Oh, come on. That was more than loud. That was intense. That was filled with the raw emotion. Come on.
That's a force of nature, that Mahler symphony. It's great.
I'm not too sure. I mean, this is hard rock.
Sounds more like a train wreck. Or like being between a hard rock and a hard place or something. I don't know. I mean, no, I actually like that. But I think a lot of really huge orchestral pieces can do just as well.
Oh, prove it. Please, prove it. I gotta have one more example to convince me that classical music can be as aggressive as hard rock.
Fine. Check out another Fifth Symphony. Again, the final movement. This is Shostakovich.
Okay. Now that was pumping. That was raw. That was hardcore, man. That was hardcore.
That was hardcore. That piece is as intense, if not more intense, than most hard rock.
That's right, Tasha. There's nothing like being in a mosh pit at a Shostakovich symphony, I'll tell you.
I think I get it, you know? Joseph, you should have your own playlist of hard rock classical music on iTunes. Get the word out.
Yeah. Hey, Tasha, do you want me to lend you some CDs in the meantime?
Well, that's nice of you, Chris, but let's not get carried away now.
Yeah, that's what my friends say. Yeah.
Well, Tanja, thanks for helping out. And Joseph, you're a great advocate and a wonderful, wonderful musician. And great teacher, too. Great to have you with us. Thank you, Joseph. Joseph Mora, 17 years old, from Los Gatos, California.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.npr.org. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Ken Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Our final performer today is a killer 13-year-old cellist with a killer piece. Please welcome, from Cambridge, Massachusetts, just across the river, Jonah Ellsworth. Jonah, welcome to the program. Is this true, what I was reading about you? You have multiple personalities, or well, at least two personalities. You describe them.
Yes. Well, at school, I'm more like kind of the big guy on campus a little bit.
Literally the big guy, 13 years old. And
I mean, I'm 5'10", and I guess I don't control myself as much at school. I'm kind of more open, you know, I'm crazy. And then when I come to New England Conservatory Prep School on Saturdays, I'm more like kind of the, you know, the little Jonah and...
Humble.
Yeah, humble and very controlled, so...
Very nice. Well, but so this secret life of yours in music, do your friends at school know about your life in
music?
They
do, but they've never heard me play.
So. Oh, well, I'm sure all your school friends listen to NPR, so they'll hear you now.
All right.
Athletics is really a way you stand out from the crowd, don't you think? I mean, what are some of the sports you get up to?
I play a lot of volleyball, and I'm the captain on my school team. And not only did we win the championship in Cambridge, but I got voted to the All-Star game.
Nice. Good. Very good. What are your most chilling and invigorating moments in a volleyball game?
I'd say when I spike it on some little people.
Some spike, yeah. That's good. Hey, but I hear you're not so good at soccer. What's the deal?
No, soccer is a passion of mine, but I'm absolutely terrible at it.
What, your feet or?
Yeah, I guess I can't control my feet at all.
Really?
I'll try to kick with my left foot and I'll kick with my right and I'll get tripped up.
Thanks for the insight. I mean, next time you're trying to spike a ball on me, I'll just say, oh, Joni, your shoe's untied. You know? Well, I would like to see your soccer playing friends pick up a cello. I mean, never mind playing this piece. I mean, this piece was originally written for the violin, but you're going to tackle it on the cello. Tell everybody what the piece is.
I'll be playing the Paganini Variations on One String on a theme by Rossini.
On one string. Just to emphasize the point that the piece is indeed played on one string and one string only, I'll now take the From the Top wire snips and clip the other three strings of your cello. You don't mind, do you, Jonah?
Absolutely not.
Okay. We'll clip the D string and the G and the C. Excellent. Oh, that felt great. Okay. Indeed, this is a superb, brilliant way to end this program. Looking forward to this. I want to thank all of our great young performers today and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And Jonah, when I get over to the piano, we're going to take it from the top.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri, with Caroline Cardias-Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore, with lighting by Tori Sweetser. Technical direction by Barrett Willett, with David Forbes, Joe Rivers, and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.